This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Some shocking news hit the culture scene in Fayetteville this summer. Bo Thorpe, longtime artistic director of the Cape Fear Regional Theater, announced that she'd be stepping down. Bo co-founded the not-for-profit theater company in 1960 under the name Fayetteville Little Theater. 2 years later, it became Cape Fear Regional Theater. 50 years of professional stage productions would follow, making it one of North Carolina's premier theater companies. With this season as her last, we invited Bo Thorpe to the State of Things to reflect on the company that she created and look forward to the future of Fayetteville's creative community. Welcome back to the show, Bo Thorpe.
Thank you so much, Frank, for wanting to hear our story.
It's a great story, and your devotion to theater, I know, goes back to your childhood in Columbia, South Carolina. In fact, I understand that at your 10th birthday, you were given a piano, which you quickly ignored, in favor of the box that it came in, and it became a stage. Is that right?
You've been hearing too many stories, but it's true. I did. I made a stage out of the box that the piano came in. Unfortunately, I've never became a very good pianist, but I did try for a long time. But my interest always seemed to go towards performing and acting, and I wish I was a better singer. I wish I was a better dancer, but I've had a chance to do it all. So,
well, were you an artistic director for those 10 years simply waiting for that box to arrive, or did that spawn the impulse?
I came to a family that for which theater would have been a very foreign activity. Not that they didn't take me to the library for the storytelling, they did, but and in school. They asked me how I became attracted to it. And I don't ever remember not raising my hand when the teacher said, "Who wants to be in the play?" I was always the first kid who wanted to be in the play. Not that I knew why I did, but there is some instinct, obviously. And I hope ultimately that we've developed some talent and some ability.
Tell us about that family you came from. You were the youngest of three children born to immigrants. Where were they from, and how did they end up in South Carolina?
Well, they were from the northern Italian Alps. Actually, my mother was born Austrian, but the territory was traded to Italy after the First World War. I should, by all rights, be second generation. I'm first generation immigrant because I was born so late to my parents. And I was, as they say, a mistake. As it turned out, I hope it wasn't a mistake. My parents came to love me, even though they certainly did not expect me. My father was 10 years older than my mother, and so most of my early life I spent with retired parents, which was they doted on me in a way that grandparents do, and developed whatever way they could for the piano lessons or whatever. And taking me to the library, and then in school, always wanting to read that play. I was Marco Polo's aunt, and I was so thrilled to get the part. You know, I'm still anxious to get the part.
Yeah, it's a part really that we don't know much about.
No, we don't. As I recall, I don't remember much about her either, but I got a chance to play her.
Your father was a stonecutter.
He was a stonecutter, and that was the reason he came to America, first to Barrie, Vermont, which is logical, where the stone is, and still a large granite and stone-cutting community. And he brought with him seven of his brothers, and most all of them, three of them remained with him, and they cut stone in Barrie for a couple of years, and then the first crash came, and they had heard of this possibility in Columbia, South Carolina. There is a granite quarry in Winnsboro, Winnsboro Blue Granite, if you ever saw the sign. Don't see them anymore, but and so Papa and 16 men formed the Columbia Granite Company, and they manufactured tombstones and all granite products. I mean, they would be in like Flynn now, wouldn't they, with everybody with granite countertops.
Yes.
with the granite countertops and all of that. But this was primarily, I remember being so proud because he did the pedestals for the statuary in the Capitol building in Columbia. It was an immigrant family in which the expectation was different, because my parents, they spoke fluent and read fluently in English, but it was not as easy to come by, I'm sure.
And your mother was killed in a car accident. You were only 10 years old?
I was 10 years old.
You were in the car?
I was in the car. My father was driving. That kind of trauma, Frank, changes your life forever. And who knows but what those kinds of things are what deepen your need to push outside of your box and find another place to be and another thing to be. My father died when I was 15 of natural causes. And so I was fortunate to have a sister who's 22 years older, or was. She died last year. And a brother 12 years older. And they took care of me until I went almost immediately after my father died to Ashley Hall School for Girls down in Charleston. And there they fostered my interest in theater in every way. I was I always played the boys' parts because I had a bigger voice. I didn't become a girl until I moved to Chapel Hill, but because I went to several girls' schools.
What was that experience like for you? Here you are essentially an orphan at 15, although older siblings who can take care of you, and now at a boarding school where there is that kind of close communal life. Has
well,
it become
it was
a new
perfect.
Family?
Yeah. It was the perfect solution to my life because everyone was in the same boat. There were no parents around. Mm. There were only the students and the teachers and a very close-knit group. I think there were 17 in our graduating class of boarders. Ashley Hall no longer boards. There were 35 of us in total, and an amazing group of young women, and they have been an influence in my life always. I had a chance there because of the Dock Street Players to be in As You Like It and Romeo and Juliet. And again, I always played a boy because it was a girls' school. But I learned a lot about directing men, which I've always thought came in pretty handy.
Not an easy
task.
And
theater's theater, whichever character you're playing, you know.
Did you begin imagining a career for yourself in theater in high school?
Well, my brother and sister, who were concerned for the rest of my life and if they were going to have me to take care of, wanted me to major in art. And I do have some ability, but not nearly as much as my brother, for example, and always had more ability in theater, but they were afraid I couldn't earn a living that way. And so I did for the first 2 years of my college major in fine art until the professors agreed that I was in the wrong department. That I had much more interest and maybe more ability in the theater.
And that was at UNC Chapel Hill. Then you went to...
So I opted then to go on into theater, and that's when I went to Chapel Hill. Lucky choice for me.
What was that experience like?
Well, in every theater department, everybody's scrambling and scratching to try to get in the productions, and mostly they weren't in those days. It wasn't the repertory company that we know now. It was mostly students, but mostly graduate students that got the roles, and we would run to the back of the theater to see if we were called back. Louise Fletcher was one of my classmates, and as a matter of fact,
who played Big Nurse.
Yes, she did. Absolutely. We were good friends. As a matter of fact, she was a bridesmaid for me, and then that was where I founded a group, refounded actually, from after World War II. Don't put me back at two.
100 years
of theater. Yeah, that was a phenomenon. Methuselah, exactly. refounded Sound and Fury, which was a student musical group. And we wrote and plagiarized songs and music, and we were put in jail now, I guess. And they were done in Memorial Hall for 50 cents a ticket, and the students would come out and audition for them. And along with other friends, we wrote these pieces, and they were quite popular. And it ran for the 2.5 years or so that I was at Chapel Hill.
And if you were put in jail, you would organize a theater company there.
Well, that's what I've often thought. When they send me off to the rest home.
Because you were busy even in college, not only active in the production as an actor, director, but also organizing new companies.
Really? I really started doing that at Ashley Hall when given the opportunity. So if you don't find your own part, make a part.
You know? How well received? What was the place of theater on the campus in those days? Were you a kind of backwaters profession, or was it a big part of campus life?
Well, of course, it was to me a big part of campus life, and it was Foster Fitzsimmons and Kai Jurgensen and Sam Selden who were the heads of the department, and I worshipped and adored them all, and they were such talented men and gave the students so much. Marion Fitzsimmons became ultimately a very good friend of mine, and so I was so happy for the association and for them to recognize any ability in any of us. Louise did finally get the lead role, Lizzie, in Rainmaker, and we were all in cheering because it was hard for an undergraduate to get a lead role nevertheless. So I guess that was the reason that we pushed out to get this Sound and Fury thing done. And
we will find out what more you got done in the many years that followed. We're talking with Bo Thorpe, founder and longtime artistic director of the Cape Fear Regional Theater in Fayetteville. Just ahead, Bo's going to talk about getting her start in theater in an unlikely place, a military base in Morocco. Stay tuned to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. My guest this hour, Bo Thorpe, co-founder of the Cape Fear Regional Theater in Fayetteville, also the company's longtime artistic director. At UNC, you met the man who would become your husband, Herbert Thorpe.
Absolutely. Tell most wonderful him. Man in the world. The luckiest day of my life. It happened soon after I came to Chapel Hill, and we started dating, and then it was just that was it. And Herbert was supportive in all aspects of what I was doing. He would go and check the call board to see whether or not I'd made the back of the play, because we were not in those days we were not allowed out on campus after 10 o'clock.
But then he would have to break the news to you in the event that
right.
you didn't.
Right. Yeah, he'd come outside my window and shake his head, yes or no.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Which was. But there were several of us that for he was doing duty for several of us. And it was soon after that that we founded Sound and Fury, which was our way to get ourselves out there. And it was a student musical group. And Herbert was so helpful in all of that. We built the scenery and made the costumes and wrote the script and starred in it and did everything they wouldn't let us do at the Playmakers.
Did it appeal to the larger Chapel Hill community?
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
They were naughty enough. In these days they would be very naughty, but they were naughty enough. And we wrote them collectively. And mostly we plagiarized the music and wrote our own lyrics. Mm-hmm. But then for the last couple, we had original music, which was a real step up for us. And it existed for a while after I left, I guess. But other things came to take its place. And
meanwhile, Herbert enlists in the military, mm-hmm. and you're off to, of all places, Morocco.
Morocco, which was, I said, where is it? And of course, we called around and found from friends that it was a good place to be. We were 16 miles inland from Casablanca, and I didn't have a job. I don't type. Still don't, and nor do I nurse or the things that women of that generation were expected to do to make a living. And a job came open at a service club, and I became the service club director and did everything from bake the birthday cake to put on the little reviews, and finally my first Broadway play, which was Guys and Dolls. And they allowed us to do it in the movie house, which was the only stage on the base. And we rehearsed in a Quonset hut and built the scenery. And it was the event of the year for everyone. And when I left, I am proud to tell you that the little newspaper for our base said, Noor Sur says farewell to its favorite doll. So that was the kind of experience it was for all of us, because there was no other enrichment except if you had the money to go downtown Casablanca, where there was so much to do and so much to see. A different world.
Had you thought by then what it is about the theater that really drew you? Now you've had time to think about it, and you've had practically a career mm-hmm. by then.
If I were just an actor, I would say that it's the acting that attracted
yeah.
me, but that's obviously not the case. I would call myself a theater person, not with any particular specialty, but I love every aspect of it. So that's what it takes, really, if you want to open a theater, if you want to start a theater. You have to be willing and ready to do the costumes and the scenery, and I love all of that. and I love promoting it. And I guess the total of it for me is a sense of community that happens in the theater unlike any place else. They come there to see what you're going to say and what you're going to do, and you have them attentive for 2 hours, you hope. And it's a sense of being together with other people and forming a company of people that have one mission to perform that play, to tell the story of that playwright. We've had great opportunities over 50 years to do that.
You talked about being an actress and acting in plays. If you could be a great actress, would you prefer to be a professional actress and leave the artistic directing to someone else?
Oh, gosh. It's not the first time I've been asked that. And I suppose if you were offering me Blanche DuBois, I would say yes. I'll take that over directing it. But I think in our community it was necessary for me to take the total roles. And I wasn't the only one. Please understand, that's why the theater succeeded. There were these wonderful people that were gathered that wanted this to happen. The actors that and people in our community who were interested in performing or singing or dancing. We've done a lot of musicals. We're sort of infamous for doing too many musicals, but.
So there you are. Now you're in Morocco. You leave. The paper says goodbye. We're going to miss our favorite doll. You're on your way.
I love that.
Herbert eventually leaves the service. He's an attorney. He's got a couple of choices. He could either go to Charlotte, big city with lots going on, or Fayetteville back then, not such a big city, not so much going on. This is early 60s.
Mm-hmm. There, it was 1960, actually. And he had had two offers. To join legal firms, and one of them was Charlie Rose in Fayetteville, and Charlie had a cousin who was a general in the Air Force, and encouraged Herbert to go interview, and he said, I don't think my wife is going to Fayetteville. There's no theater there, and the general said, Herbert, we would appreciate it if you'd go to at least interview, and so we went, sat in this greasy spoon on Gillespie Street for. What seemed like an eternity, and finally Herbert came back and he said, Bo, the man said, whatever they offer us in Charlotte, he'll give us more.
This man, Charlie Rose, not the TV host.
Not the
public
TV host, no.
This is a former congressman.
I'm sure it must be some kind of relation. You know, there are all those Scots around our community.
But he is, in fact, we're talking about the former congressman.
Yes, yeah. Right. Actually, his father, who did go to the state legislature, and then young Charlie went on to Washington. And so, okay, we'll give it a try.
This is quite an offer. He's going to match and beat anything they can do in Charlotte.
Yeah, right. And I've often thought maybe that should be Fable's slogan. Whatever they offer you in Charlotte, we'll give you more.
There you go.
It certainly has been true for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And theater's thriving in Fayetteville. And it has a difficulty thriving in a lot of other places where there's so much competition, especially where there is incoming competition.
Now, you know that now about Fayetteville, but mm-hmm. you didn't know it then.
No.
What did you feel
no.
when you were going to go to Fayetteville
no.
instead of Charlotte?
Well, there was this playhouse out at Fort Bragg, and I did go out there to do Little Mary Sunshine or something. And then the next thing, it was a call-up, and they were doing a musical downtown, and I said, okay, I'll help. And next thing you know, I was, you know, painting the scenery and doing whatever and shoving everybody over.
Bossy. Taking control again.
Yeah, bossy, I guess. anyway, we decided out of that we should form a little theater, a community theater, a real one. This was called the Musical Arts Guild, and they only did an operetta every other year or something. It was not what I was looking for, or any of us were looking for. So there were about five or six of us that joined in directing the different productions and selecting seasons, and it was very small to start, you know, two plays in the first season, and then three, and then four, and then five. And at the point that it had become... that the other directors had fallen by the wayside, and I was directing more than four. We decided this was a job, and so I applied for a salary assistance grant from the Arts Council of North Carolina and received it. And I've had the job ever since.
Did you get a sense at the time that there was a real hunger for theater in Fayetteville? It's a military town.
It depends on, like I guess most places, but it depends on what it is. And that's the reason we do so many musicals, is because people tell us that's what they want to see. And yet, if if whatever we do, if we do it well, I think that an audience comes. They're not. Don't make me feel sad, Bo. Don't make me think, Bo, is what I hear from the audience coming out. And yet we must have, we have a responsibility, don't we, to our community to give them, to give our children the opportunity to see all kinds of theater. So we've got to earn our way. So we do that musical, we do that Guys and Dolls, but then we'll, last year, View from the Bridge or you know, some of the classics. This year we're doing Othello out at Fayetteville State. So.
Now, you didn't start out, it wasn't the Cape Fear Regional Theater when you began, right?
No. We only aspired to be a little theater, a community theater. No one was paid, so it was called Fayetteville Little Theater. And at the point that it was actually Tony Rand who suggested, and some of our legislators, that if we had a more regional name, we might be up for more funds. And so with great difficulty, we changed our name to Cape Fear Regional Theater. And, of course, it was the happiest and best decision we ever made because we have lived up to our regional reputation. We have an audience that comes from at least 100 miles in each direction, and we're proud of our season ticket holders from Raleigh.
you remember your first production?
The first production.
Yeah. At Cape Fear?
At Fayetteville Little Theater.
Fayetteville Little Theater.
We did acquire the building, rented it for $50 a month, and we did Blythe Spirit, Noel Coward's Blythe Spirit, built a set on the concrete floor, and of course I painted the set too and played one of the leads, and that's sort of, you know, just let me do it was sort of the philosophy. And at that point, Herbert and I very much wanted to have a family, but it wasn't happening yet. And so those early years got spent putting a lot of effort into building the theater along with so many other wonderful. The philosophy of the theater is today the same as it was then. And that is, of course, the play is the thing and give it the best you've got and put everything you have in it. So we don't pay high salaries. We don't, you know, our real goal is to do the best theater we can do.
But it also, I think your career now, wherever you go, you pull people together, you start some kind of a company, and people enjoy what you do, and they come and they sit in those seats, suggests that there's an appetite for theater everywhere, and that to sell any community short is a big mistake.
I really believe that's true. And I also believe, I mean, our people love to see a celebrity come in, and we now very frequently, almost always, bring in people from New York, but only when we don't have that person in Fayetteville or in the region. I shouldn't say Fayetteville anymore because it really is regional. We do bring actors from all over North Carolina. But they love to see hometown people take the role. And that's what's going to be fun about night of January 16th. It's completely hometown folks, a lot of them in the legal profession, people who have actually been in court in that courtroom.
Well, tell us about that, because the night of January 16th, which kicks off your next season, was actually the first production of the new Cape Fear Regional Theater.
It was. We didn't have a stage space, but there was this courtroom. And so, of course, we prevailed upon Herbert to make the arrangements, and he did, and we had a place to perform, and the audience came.
And tell us about the production itself. It's an Ayn Rand.
It's an Ayn Rand. It's
right?
Ayn Rand. I know.
Wow. So it goes for 37 hours. No, it's not Atlas Shrugged. It's a play, and it's a
courtroom drama.
Yeah.
In which a woman is accused of murdering her husband, and so at the end, the audience, who have been selected to be jurors, must decide on the guilt or innocence of Karen Andre, and there's an alternative ending for the play, and the actors learn both endings. It's really a lot of fun. We're doing it as a happening. That was an expression we used in the 60s that doesn't seem to happen anymore.
Yeah.
But it begins outside of the courthouse and is going to involve everybody. The audience is invited to dress in the 60s and they're to be a friend of Karen Andre's or not.
And how great to have it in a courthouse back then as well. What was the response, the community response?
Well, they came.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. They came. You know, when you do it, you don't know you're doing it except for yourself. And when the audience comes, that's the proof. When we moved into that old abandoned moving house, we had no idea that people would come in a long dress and a tuxedo and become patrons. And that's what happened. And those patrons, many of them, the ones that are still living, God bless them, are our patrons to this day. They have been the real support and the reason that that theater has survived. Fayetteville needed us, and we needed them. And it's been a great life for all of us.
For over 50 years. Now, I know it's hard to pick a favorite, but think of a few productions that really stand out for one reason or another. You had a production with one with a character in town. Your first production of A Christmas Carol featured one of the more notorious characters in Fayetteville.
Most unforgettable man. Anywhere, much less in Fayetteville. And his name was Pat Reese. He was a news reporter on the crime beat at the Fayetteville Observer. And he came there to do that, but he was also a recovering alcoholic and so was in the process of founding a halfway house for alcoholics. And he was in a tiff with the mental health director, whose name happened to be Billy Graham. And Billy Graham invited him to come to meet him in front of the mental health. And Pat pulled up in his car, and Billy Graham got out and moved in next to Pat and shot him dead away in the mouth. And then turned the gun on himself. It was a terrible, terrible story, and it was, of course, a national story. You don't hear of this happening every day. Somehow or another, Pat fell out of the car and managed to get himself inside. I don't know how he survived at all, but he stayed in the hospital for a long time and lived to perform again. And one of the plays that we had done before this accident was On Golden Pond, and of course, the one we came back with 2 years later was On Golden Pond. Never go on stage with dogs, children, or Pat Reese.
New rule.
Yeah,
huh?
New rule.
Quite a survivor, though.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's shot in the mouth.
In the mouth. It destroyed his entire palate.
Wow. And he went on to, and he did one more performance.
He did several. He did Uncle Nate in Clyde Edgerton's Rainy, which was one of the first productions. It was the first production of Rainy. And Clyde says that he will never think of Uncle Nate without thinking of Pat Reese. He was the quintessential drunk. But he also, you know, he could play Shakespeare. Before his accident, he prided himself on talking like this, you know, with this Shakespearean sound. And then, unfortunately, after the accident, it came out pretty squeaky and small. Whoa, what a great character in our life.
So other standout moments for you. Again, if you think about the value of regional theater, reflecting the values of the community, and characters like this who are present on the stage in national productions, isn't that part of why you think people come to the theater? It really does reflect our experience, but it also allows us to transcend it. And as you say, forget. Don't make me sad. Don't make me think. Mm-hmm. All of that seems to happen on the stage.
I think a great pride for us is that we bring guest artists from all over the country to our theater. And we started doing that gradually after we did a major renovation of the theater in 1988. And these guest artists want to come back. They have spread the reputation of Cape Fear Regional Theater all over the country, especially in New York. And it is not difficult to attract these actors to come to our theater to perform. So we implement what we have in a region with people who come from outside. And we've had a number of notables. We just did Our Town with Bill Christopher, who was Father Mulcahy on MASH. But the list goes on of the people who have been in our theater. And so over 50 years, especially in the last 30 years, we have built a reputation of being a theater to reckon with.
Were there some tough times along the way when you thought you weren't going to make it?
Oh, yeah. There was that terrible time during the early 70s when Jane Fonda was coming and everybody, and then there was all of this smoking of dope and all this stuff out on the street in front of the theater. And, of course, people have a tendency to think that's theater people, so they avoided the theater. There was a coffee house closed next door to us and the pizza place closed next door to them because because they were doing illegal things. And
I'm guessing booking Jane Fonda in the 70s at Fayetteville was bad. That was bad booking.
Well, well, yeah. I mean, there are veterans who to this day do not recover from that.
I can certainly understand. My guest this hour, Bo Thorpe, founder and longtime artistic director of Cape Fear Regional Theater in Fayetteville. More of that conversation just ahead on The State of Things. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Bo Thorpe is my guest on the show this hour, co-founder of the Cape Fear Regional Theater in Fayetteville 50 years ago. She has also served as the company's only artistic director. This season is her last, although she will remain part of the organization as founding artistic director. And Bo, you said earlier you were late to starting a family, but you did and had two boys. Tell us about them.
Very fortunate to have, they were worth waiting for. We were married 8.5 years before Holden Thorpe came, and he's named after his father, Herbert Holden Thorpe. And as many might know, he is now the chancellor of the university. It wasn't a direct route. He's also a musician and primarily a chemist and a very smart boy. And
has a favorite element on the periodic table, I learned, and it is ruthenium.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know if you tell his mom that, but now you know.
See, the science part of these boys, while I think it came from my side of the family, did bypass me. And so, it's Greek.
So how old was he when you had to stop helping him with his homework?
We never did help him with his homework. He never brought it home. Holden was always, he wanted to do other things, and so he did his homework at school, and then when he came home, he was learning to play the guitar or making a movie or all the things that he became the only, at the time, computer expert in Fayetteville, and then he went off to Chapel Hill and would come home on weekends and make $100 for replugging your computer for you, and Holden's always had a way of making a living. At the same time, his brother, who's 4 years younger, was the one who would take the opposite tack, whatever that was. And Clay is now in a company called Catalyst Adventures, which is a specialty in biotech field. I spoke to him this morning to see if he might want to have lunch, and he said he was in Chicago. So I don't think we'll have lunch today, but so both of them are in the biotech field originally. Holden somehow gravitated to the managing of whatever it was. So there was the planetarium, and then there was the chemistry department, and then there was the dean, and then ultimately the chancellor. He's a born leader and has a great interest in people and the world, and I think he makes a great chancellor.
Both boys seem to gravitate toward the creative arts in science.
Absolutely.
And then Holden seemed to take on your organizational skills.
Well, yes, and Holden also is a musician. As a matter of fact, he almost detoured and went that way. He plays a mean guitar and bass and loves to play. That's his great recreation. And married a woman who is also very he met her at the theater, of course. And they have two beautiful children.
Did you make the kids star or take parts in any of your plays?
You try keeping them from it.
Yeah.
You know
why?
I mean, Holden did the lights, and he did a lot of the technical things. Clay was my little star. He was at all the little boy actor parts, and has a really terrific special quality to his voice, and Fortunately, they've never, either one of them, really used that to for a career. But both of them use it as their avocation, and it's I love seeing that they love to go to the theater. They love to go to New York. They see everything everywhere.
And you said you tried keeping them from it. Why?
Oh, well, you couldn't keep them from it.
Yeah.
That's the truth, because it is. You know, most children are attracted to the theater. It's fascinating. And the opportunity to stand before folks. I have taught a lot over these 50 years, and parents will sometimes send you a student because they're shy, or they will send you one because they're too extroverted. And it seems to cure both ills.
Yeah, have you noticed that with the shy ones? I've done radio theater with children, and the ones who say they don't want to be on mic, I know are going to be my stars, and they mm-hmm. always are, and they are always the best actors, and you just have to sort of wait for them to. And I've often wondered if they're just, if they have a higher sense of standard, and they just think they don't meet up to it, and that's why they don't want to take on those roles.
I really think that's true. I really think that's true of Holden. For example, he will not sing with his band because he is so judgmental about the way he sounds. But he loves the way he sounds on the guitar, you know. So I think that's absolutely true. It also gives you the joy of music and of performing that you can't duplicate that in any other way in your life, I don't think. Not if you are bent for that.
This summer, you announced that you would be stepping down as artistic director for more than 40 years. The company's been going for 50. Why? Was it a hard decision?
Well, it's time. It's time for someone else. And we're so fortunate to have found a really wonderful man. His name is Tom Quaintance, and he's coming in the next couple of weeks from California with his wife and new baby, and to create a second chapter for this theater and to raise his family in our community. We're so excited about that. Fayetteville is so proud of that.
Tell us about him and his background and why he'd want to leave California for Fayetteville.
His name may be recognized because he has directed quite a bit at the Playmakers in Chapel Hill. His good friend is Joe Hodge, and so that was really how we became acquainted. And I've seen a number of the things that he has directed there. Not ever seen him perform. We'll have to get him to do that at some point because he's also an actor.
An actor as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. His wife is an actor, too.
And has performed in some Playmakers. So he sees something here in North Carolina in the theater
scene. He sees a solvent theater, the building paid for, money in the bank, not a lot, but enough, and an audience. You know, you'll go anywhere where there is an audience, and we have that audience. They think we're the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Why? What's going on?
We welcome them. It's a warm place to be. It's not... So people have somehow an image, if they don't know, that the theater might be a cold place or one in which they are excluded from the topics. And we make a real point of, without being ashamed at all of being hometowny, to welcome that audience into our theater. And I think they feel a difference there. The actors do, too. They come from all over, and they this is a special theater.
Overall, how would you say regional theater is doing these days across the nation?
They're in trouble.
Yeah.
People, you know, as the incomes go down, then the money to spend for pleasures in life are scarce. And we have been so lucky.
Is it just luck? What do you think is happening? What are you doing right that maybe other companies aren't doing? Or what are those other companies, what could they do?
Well, the thing to avoid is not to overspend yourself. And too many theaters have overspent themselves, or too many arts agencies can overspend themselves. It's a scary place. You think you're getting to be a big shot, and now you can have this and you can have that. And money buys almost anything. I mean, money makes everything easier in the theater, whether it's a scenic designer or an actor. But you can only spend what you've got, and that has been my philosophy and the philosophy of our board of directors. And it's a challenge. It does not exist in every theater. So they have closed all around the country.
Aren't people going to see those Boffo productions where helicopters crash on the stage, Lion King, big costumes,
yeah.
big... I mean, that's what brings them in, and if you don't have the money for that...
Do you know that... Superman, is it Superman that is doing just no, it's not Superman. It's, what is it?
Oh, is Spider-Man?
Spider-Man,
yeah,
I'm
Spider-Man.
Sorry.
Yeah,
Spider-Man
yeah. Yeah.
is just making huge
right.
business in spite of the worst reviews that
right.
you've read in years.
Because people want to see
guys
flying.
Because people want to see the guy flying.
Flying
and the
they couldn't even get that to work for,
yeah. Yeah.
for the
technical
first couple
aspects
of weeks.
Are not
yeah.
anything that are going to be repeated right. in the hinterlands, that's for sure. You know,
but it is really when you think about theater, it's some of the stuff you do with the sparest sets that require the greatest imagination.
They are so moving.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend my time talking about what's going on in New York, but there's a wonderful play called War Horse that is done by the National Theatre of England, and it is pure, artistic, beautiful. It is to be seen, and can someday be replicated in smaller theaters. I don't know that people are knocking the doors down to see that, although I think it's very popular.
Right.
They're knocking the doors down to see the Book of Mormon, I think.
tell us about your upcoming season.
Oh, well, aside from Ayn Rand's play, we're opening the season with a hilarious farce that was a huge hit on Broadway called Boeing, Boeing.
And, in honor of you.
Sorry. I didn't even think about that, Frank. I'll have to underline the B-O. and then we follow that with Miss Saigon, which we're doing in the first place to honor all of the Vietnam veterans that were not honored when they came home from the war. Fayetteville is very sensitive to that, and our mayor has been very sensitive to that. So we have a huge event that's occurring for 10 days around 11-11-11. And then we will do Tom's first play that he will direct. It's actually the best Christmas pageant ever, which we have done for years. And then I am doing an encore, calling up everybody that's ever cared about Cape Fear Regional Theater or Fayetteville Little Theater for that matter, and asking them to come and do something with us. So that's still in the making. And then Tom will direct Othello at Fayetteville State University, and then comes On Golden Pond, which I will do with Mayon Weeks, who's another regular, and then we will close out the season with Spitfire Grill, which Tom is directing, and we go down to the river. That's one of our great innovations, is a space that we move into for at least 2 to 3 weeks at the end of May every year. And this will be a reprise of the Patsy Cline play that everyone loves, A Closer Walk with Patsy Cline. Everybody, when in doubt, do Patsy Cline.
Now, Miss Saigon really does have the helicopter crashing on the stage.
It does, but we won't.
Yeah, just
we have a 325-seat house and a beautiful stage, a newly renovated proscenium. We're very excited about the work that's been done to open this 50th season. So it's going to be beautiful.
Now, you had Good Old Girls a couple years back, and a sort of local, I think the essence of regional theater, where you have local writers and performers and that sort of thing. How about regional theater as an incubator for other local talent, not only actors and directors, but writers and musicians as well?
Well, it should be. It should be the way that that writers can have their work seen. Someone has to put it in a play form, and playwrights have to learn to write. They have to, it's not taught so much in school. But we have been very lucky, you probably recognize, in having some of the major writers of our state to give us their work to perform. So we've not only done Good Old Girls, we've done four of Clyde Edgerton's, beginning with Rainey, and Lunch at the Piccadilly as our most recent production.
How would you say, you say you've always had support right from the start, a couple of rough moments along the way, you survived them all and thrived. How has the scene changed, or has it, the cultural scene that supports the theater, how has that changed in Fayetteville?
Well, the big change in Fayetteville is, of course, we're becoming the Army headquarters. And that brings all of those high-level officers from Atlanta. And I know they think they've come to the desert, but wait till they come to see a play at KP Regional Theater. It happens over and over and over again. And so the other military will lead them to that. And we have, we don't just have theater. We have an absolutely marvelous arts council that they're constantly producing festivals and attention to the other artists in our community. We are a very artistic community, but we're thought mostly of being just military. And we always want to supplement that. We are proud to be in military community, but we would want to supplement that with an artistic image.
Does that have an impact on the kind of plays that you select?
It should, shouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
To make certain that we are For example, I think we will sell out of Miss Saigon because, first of all, because of name recognition. People know that title. Like you say, they're going to be looking for a helicopter. But it also tells us a military story, and that's very relevant in our community. We're so anxious I haven't given you any time at all about our children, and we do have a strong and have component for children's education in the theater for all of these years. We do a thing every year, call it our classic series, in which we present a play. It's our excuse for doing Our Town or Othello or whichever the ones of the plays that we don't think will draw an audience. We have given that free to all of the 11th graders in Cumberland County, and their ticket is supported by citizens in the community who buy their ticket or buy 10 tickets or 100 tickets, and that's how we've been able to do that now for 20 years.
Then is there other outreach too in schools?
Oh yes, it's done. We do go into this. The wonderful thing we do when we bring in guest artists to do one of those productions, Othello, for example, we send them into the schools to talk to the children about what they're going to see. And I shouldn't call them children, the young people that are going to come in to see this play. And, of course, they all want to know how do you get to be a star and they don't really want to know about acting. But in the process, we did have a Hamlet years ago that was just, I said, if we're going to do Hamlet, we're going to have a hot Hamlet. And we did. He was gorgeous. And he went into all the schools. And before each performance, in costume, he would prepare the audience for what they were going to see. I've never seen an actor do that before. Usually they won't break the wall, you know.
Right.
But he said, now you see me here now, and now you're going to see me as Hamlet, and I want you to know how to accept that, how to learn from that. It was really a great experience.
Thank you so much for getting that scene going for these past 50 years, keeping it going, and I'm sure there'll be at least 50 more. Bo Thorpe, so great to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Frank, for having me.
Bo Thorpe is the co-founder of the Cape Fear Regional Theater in Fayetteville. As always, the company has quite a number of stage productions coming up. You can find out about them at cfrt.org. Thanks for listening. Our website is stateofthings.org. You can follow us on Facebook. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix, Alex Granados, and Isaac Davey Aronson. Robin Copley is the technical director. Al Wadarski sitting in today. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.